Section86.com. We're changing the world of podcasting one show at a time.
86 Productions.
Welcome to Off the Mark, the best podcast providing the most in-depth insight and analysis into the world of professional wrestling. On today's show, we have Aaron, Roger, and Doug to join Andrew as we discuss this month's view from the turnbuckle. Aaron, we have some sad news to start out on, and what's going on with that?
Yeah, so unfortunately, Big Van Vader, Leon White, tragically passed away. He had been dealing with some heart issues for a while now. He was, 350 to 400 pounds, obviously a really big guy. And they said that he had pneumonia not too long ago, and unfortunately his heart just stopped working on him. So he was one of the best big man. You know, if you look at kind of the super heavyweights, he probably was number one, number two. If you think about all the really great ones that came through the wrestling world. So it's very sad. He was in his 60s. So luckily it wasn't a drug-induced death, but, either way. Very, very sad.
Yeah, I mean, I've always put Vader on one of those people that it surprised me that WWE, WWF missed the ball on him, because he was a fantastic super heavyweight. He was a big guy. He had good character. You know, everybody backstage said he was a great guy. You know, he didn't die via drugs. Unfortunately, I think he kind of knew, not similar to Warrior, where he was just kind of speaking and maybe it happened to be a coincidence, but Vader knew his time was towards the end. I think he said a couple of years ago, he's probably got a year or two to live. It's unfortunately we're going to do this many more times where we talk about the deaths of wrestlers, because this has been this industry. This wasn't drugs, but he lived a very tough life as far as, the pounding he put on his body. He was 60 years old. He was a big guy. You know, sad to see him go. Fantastic wrestler. I don't think he got the appreciation in America that he truly deserved, but he was massively over in Japan.
One of the few, Americans that was actually the heavyweight champion in New Japan Wrestling. So he is a huge impact all over wrestling. I remember some of the classic matches he had in even WCW and against Savage and Hogan and Bear and everybody. And this is a sad one. You know, it was something that we all kind of saw coming due to his size and health. And he didn't look very good the last couple of times that I saw his, an article about him like that. So, unfortunately it was his time, and, he is going to be missed.
And real quick, actually, just, come off Doug's point, not only was he the IWGP heavyweight champion, he's one of the very few people that also was the Triple Crown champion over in AJPW, which very, very few people have held both of those titles. And then, of course, he also was a WCW heavyweight champion as well. So a very storied career outside of WWE.
All right. And I think another great thing about this week is that we had someone get released. I guess it's not great, but someone did. And so, Aaron, I know that this guy is your favorite guy in the world. So who actually got released?
He lost his job and didn't even get wished well in his future endeavors. And you're like, oh, it was a great week.
Exactly.
So Big Cass, and they like to cover up the C when he walks out. He unfortunately was released. A lot of issues apparently stemming from their trip to Europe. Apparently also when he wrestled the little person who was dressed up as Daniel Bryan, he took some liberties with him that he was not supposed to. So apparently he was rubbing people the wrong way, and that's it for him. So I guess, him and Enzo can form a tag team in TNA or something.
That is true.
In the last 2 years, it is astonishing to see how hard they've fallen. Like if you listen to like our reactions about the idea of Enzo and Cass coming up to the main roster around WrestleMania 32, we were hyped. They were a fun tag team. We were yelling their catchphrases. They were one of the best money merchant sales people. I mean, they seemed like they had a future in the tag division, and they just fell off a cliff. Enzo, obviously, his problems are well documented, and I thought maybe it was just Enzo. Apparently, Cass is also an idiot. Like, to not even undersell what Aaron said, not only did he take liberties with the little person, he then asked for permission not only with the writers who told him not to do it, but then allegedly went to Vince McMahon himself and decided, well, even though Vince told me not to do it, I'm going to do it anyway. I said the same thing about Enzo. Know your place. You are not Brock Lesnar. You are not the top guy. You are easily replaceable. You're not even that good. Now, what do we got here? Couple of failures. Later.
So you're saying that he needed to learn to know his role and shut his mouth?
And you can't teach that.
And you can't. This is not a big loss for WWE. He was horrible on the mic. He was 10 times worse when Enzo left. The only thing he was tall. He wasn't athletically gifted. He's just tall. To Roger's point, I am very, very surprised that out of the three of them in NXT, Carmella is the one left standing. Didn't see that coming.
Yeah, I'm surprised that she's still around. I thought she'd be the first one to go, but hey, we were wrong. Or I was wrong.
Before we move on, has there ever been a team where both the guys end up being the Jannetty?
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, just saying, right? You always ask, who's the Shawn Michaels, who's the Marty Jannetty? Was Carmella the Shawn Michaels, and they were both the Jannettys? Like, did we miss something?
Apparently, she's missed champion. Something, because she's still around, and they're not. Oh, my gosh. So, Doug, what did you think about the 7-star match that Omega put on?
Oh, that was a beauty of a match. I don't know about 7 stars, but it was thrilling from moment one to all the way to the end. It really was a back and forth, false finish after false finish. And to see Omega finally pull it off and win the title, especially after New Japan came out and basically was saying, Okada is going to be our guy for the future. He's going to be a legend. He's going to smash every record. And literally like 2 days after that, after they make that statement, he loses the title. I don't know if it's the wrong hype or anything like that, but it definitely fooled me. And I'm definitely glad for Omega. Truly deserved it. If there was anybody to beat Okada, it needed to be Omega. And I'm surprised it took 3 different tries to do it, but the 4th time's the charm, I guess. So excellent match, back and forth and everything like that. The falls that were counted were wonderful, and definitely go out and watch it if you haven't seen it already.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to defer to Doug as far as the quality, because I haven't seen the match. I've heard great things about it. To me, the thing that's the most telling is that, and this is a credit to NJPW, and when Kenny Omega won, people were legitimately happy. Like, this wasn't a situation where it was telegraphed the way that we thought maybe Roman win was at 34, or the way it was telegraphed at 32. People were genuinely happy for this guy to win, and it just felt like kind of one of those old school moments where the guy, you know, when Daniel Bryan won at 30 or when Seth cashed in, like, you were genuinely happy. And I think that's a testament to how good their storytelling was, that we thought Okada was invincible. Like, if he would have held it through Wrestle Kingdom, you know, this year, I wouldn't have been that surprised. So the fact that it took him 3 matches, you know, I read a little bit about the build as far as the way that they structured the falls. It sounds fantastic. It really played into the history of their series together. 7 stars is stupid. I'm not even going to get into that because I could rant about that for a day. But I had no problem with it being called a 5-star match. From everything I've read, it basically booked perfectly start to finish. You know, awesome for Kenny Omega. Awesome day for Winnipeg. Jericho captured the IGWP IC title. So Omega and Jericho are running NJPW. Never thought I would say that. Fantastic. Good for Omega. I do want to see him one day in NXT. I'm not necessarily saying it will happen, but gosh, the talent over there would be great if he could come over.
I don't think he would go to NXT. I think he'd go right to the main roster.
I don't wish that evil on Kenny Omega.
Oh, okay. All right. Fair enough. Fair enough.
Yeah, I totally agree. The match itself, I think, is perfect. It is, you know, a perfect 5-star match. Every fall was fantastic. I think the way they went about it was amazing. And also, kudos to Omega. He needed this. I think it was the time to take it off of Okada and to see whatever they decide to do for the next Wrestle Kingdom, which obviously is the WrestleMania for them. I'm not sure who he'll face. I assume he's going to hold the title for a little while, and I think that'd be the perfect time for somebody to potentially take it off him. But they don't need to, you know. Okada held the title for so long. He held it for well over a year. And so, you know, I don't think they need to do that. Yeah, 2 years. That's right. So I don't think that Omega needs to lose the title right away. You know, they could have some long reigns with him and see what happens. So, but either way, congratulations to Kenny Omega. If he does come to WWE, hopefully they don't give him, I don't know, maybe the A-Train treatment. You know, hopefully they don't do something like that. Anyway, Moving on to our next topic, Andy.
Alexa Bliss wins the women's Money in the Bank match, which I was shocked about. But then what happens after that, Doug?
Cashes in. She hits Ronda Rousey, causing Ronda to win the match by DQ, but then cashes in on Nia Jax and wins the title, which, you know what? When I saw that Alexa won the Money in the Bank, I was like, wow, I'm wrong for once. This is a new feeling. It's been a while since I missed a Money in the Bank prediction, but I wasn't too surprised because it was like that fits Alexa's persona. That's something to keep her character relevant. She can always refer back to, I miss Money in the Bank. You know, I could see this being a long, drawn-out thing that she's going to make. You know, oh, I'm going to cash in. No, I'm not going to cash in. The fact that they had her win at Money in the Bank, cash in right away, I'm a little bit dreadful for because of the aspect of, I remember at the end of Alexa's title run, I was kind of bored of her. I love Alexa, but her title run was boring. She did a great job with what she was given, but it wasn't to the caliber of Sasha versus Charlotte or even Becky versus Sasha or even when Bayley was somewhat on top and then dropped drastically to the bottom. So we'll see. Hopefully the second time she has the title, it is a little bit better. But as of right now, she was the best title holder that they've had in a long time.
Yeah, I mean, the only reason I really just didn't think Alexa was going to win is pretty much all the points that Doug made at the end. Her title reign was seemingly forever. I'm pretty sure she won it the post-WrestleMania pay-per-view and basically held it with the exception of like a one-week break for Sasha all the way up until WrestleMania. So I kind of just thought, okay, the Alexa title reign is over. They're going to push somebody else to the top. I foolishly believed that they were done with this stupid Sasha Bailey storyline and maybe they would split them off into something else. My bad. The execution of it was fine. Alexa is an ultimate opportunist. Actually makes sense because she's flipping tiny. Like, she really should have never been booked as a dominant champion. She should have always booked as more of a female edge, where she just picks her spot perfectly, and her climbing up the ladder without really doing anything in Money in the Bank was perfect, and then her cash-in was smart. She let Nia and Ronda beat the crap out of each other and then, you know, cashed in. Makes sense. My only problem is I have no interest in Alexa versus anyone on the Raw roster who's not Ronda Rousey, to be honest. So I just don't care. Much like my general apathy towards everything on Raw. Cool at Money in the Bank, I don't care where it goes forward because we all know, inevitably, Ronda Rousey has to be the face of this division, which means she has to get this title. I'd rather they just give Ronda the title now, but I guess we're going to delay this out till SummerSlam because that's, what, 30 days will be through the next pay-per-view and then, oh, look at that. Ronda's back for the second biggest pay-per-view of the year. What a surprise.
I was just going to ask you about that. Do you think they're going to wait to do that so then Ronda can beat Alexa? Because, you know, realistically, you don't see her really beating Nia Jax for the title, but you can see her beating Alexa Bliss.
Why do I not see Ronda Rousey beating Nia Jax for the title?
No, I guess I was curious. Do you actually see Ronda actually beating Nia, like, I guess legitimately, because Nia's such a bigger person? Okay. All right.
Well, for one, Ronda Rousey, I don't care about Nia Jax's size. Ronda Rousey is legitimate. Like, she's actually a fighter. She was a bantamweight champion or whatever class she was in. Like, there's nothing about, I don't care about their size difference. If you put Nia and Rousey in the street fight, Nia, the only question is how long does it take for Nia to get beat up? She ain't winning. So I see no problem with Ronda making her tap out. I actually have more of an issue with Alexa versus Ronda because Alexa has no hope. She had loses the size advantage. She has no one in her corner to beat up Ronda Rousey. Like, she doesn't even have a Nia to be her heater. What is she going to do to stop the armbar? Like, no. But that should be a squash match in 30 seconds.
You know what? Alexa has that thing where she can actually dislocate her elbow, if I'm correct. And they could play that into the storyline.
We might find out how far that arm can bend.
Yeah, no, I agree with everybody's points here. And, you know, it was a surprise for sure for Alexa to win. And I definitely agree. It really came, not that Alexa was dumb, but I think that the way the Dean was, because it comes down to, like, I think about the This Is Your Life segment, you know, I mean, I come back to that. And to be perfectly honest, even with The Rock and Mankind, I didn't find it that good. I'll be perfectly honest. It'd say, like, oh, you know, like, oh, that's kind of funny. And maybe it worked because of The Rock, because of the charisma he had. You can't repeat that. With even though Alexa, who I think is one of the best women's faces of the women's division, not one of the best wrestlers, but one of the best faces of that division, you can't just repeat things, you know, just because it worked before. You know, you have to tailor it for that person. And if they don't put credible opponents, or they don't have a good match because she is a good heel, if you don't have good faces to go against her, then, you know, who cares about the ring? You know, like, who's she going to face next, right? Sasha Banks, maybe? Maybe Bayley? You know, that's really about, you know, the what you have for faces right now.
Never Bayley. Never again do I want to see Alexa Bayley. Never.
I know. I don't either. Right? So you have that, you know, on the Raw side, you know, until Ronda comes back. And my guess, my prediction right now is that at SummerSlam, Ronda versus Alexa, and Ronda wins in like 30 seconds. Like, that's my prediction. I think it'll be a Brock Lesnar Goldberg type deal.
Interesting. All right, let's move on to the men's Money in the Bank. So I picked it. Braun Strowman is their champion. Aaron, what did you think about this match? Because for me, this was not the best one I think they've put on, but it was a couple memorable spots, but that's where it kind of stopped for me. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think that there are a number of people you could see winning, and you would understand if they did. To me, I actually thought Braun was one of the few I did not see winning. And the main reason why is because he didn't need that briefcase. He doesn't need it at all. He has a claim to the title against Brock Lesnar. You know, obviously, him and Brock had a dumb match last year, but, you know, they had the triple threat where he didn't eat the pin. He won the greatest Royal Rumble, so he could say, look, you know, I beat 49 other men, you know, let me in. You know, he's beat Roman Reigns. So he has a claim. He doesn't even need that briefcase. I think it's actually unnecessary, to be quite honest. So he was, I did not pick him because of that. And I thought that Samoa Joe, I thought that would have helped elevate him immediately. And if AJ retained for whatever reason, he could go after AJ very quickly. And, you know, you have the shadow then hanging over AJ's head. When is Samoa Joe going to cash in? Because they are not going to screw him up. They're not going to let him cash in and lose, you know, the match. He's going to cash in and win, you would think. So I thought that Joe was the person that not only should have won, but was the most logical one. So WWE went the other way.
Yeah, I mean, I said this on our, you know, previous one. There's no point in Raw winning a Money in the Bank when the champion's not around. It legitimately takes away the intrigue of being able to cash in anytime, any place, when you can't cash in anytime, any place. So I thought that should have disqualified Raw in the first place. Second off, much like Aaron said, Braun Strowman doesn't need it. He just does not need this briefcase. He's already been booked well. He's already over. He has a legitimate claim to a championship shot after winning the Greatest Royal Rumble. Money in the Bank is something that you use to elevate somebody to that next level. That's something that should have been done on SmackDown, and now you have AJ Styles as a paranoid champion with a legitimately dangerous guy like Samoa Joe or even Rusev. I would have had no problem with Rusev winning. I wouldn't have had a problem with The Miz winning. I would have thought it would have been done with Bobby Roode, the one, and I like Roode, but it just didn't make sense for him. Balor could have used this a lot more because Balor is directionless right now, so him having the Money in the Bank at least means he can interject himself at any point in time. Ron doesn't need this. Yeah, it probably signals he's going to win the championship at some point, and that's fine. But I just thought this was a wasted opportunity, which is pretty much the WWE's theme. I mean, it wasn't a bad match. It wasn't a great match. They tried to murder Kevin Owens, but I don't think this is the direction that you needed to go. And ultimately, you could have done whatever they're going to do with Braun without the briefcase.
The match was all right. It is a Money in the Bank match. You had your spots and everything like that. And I kind of wonder if Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn have done something wrong in the back, or if this is payback for all that when they supposedly went on their own script for against the New Day, because they just WWE's killing them. But I will say this for the Money in the Bank. This was the hardest one I think I've ever had to try to predict, because, and like everybody else said, so many of these people could win, and you would see that as a legit, oh yeah, that works. That works too. Braun, like everybody said, it was one of those things that he doesn't need this. He absolutely doesn't need this. It's going to be, but the way I'm thinking it's going to happen is Roman will win at SummerSlam and Braun will cash in, and it will be a big and glorious Rusev Day on that day when he does do it.
Are you sure he's going to do it on Rusev Day?
I'm positive it's going to happen on Rusev
Day. Okay, it's all right.
Doug, I have a question for you on that, because I thought the same thing, and Roger, it seems like you were thinking that too. They're going to have, even if Roman doesn't necessarily win the title, the thought is that we're going to have Braun cash in during that match, or he's going to win it. And so Roman gets screwed again. And so we're going to shoehorn Roman into this conversation real quick. Do you think that this is going to set up then for the next 3 months, a Braun versus Roman set of matches for the Universal title, and in an attempt to try to get Roman Reigns over? Is that what you're surmising out of this?
I've been guessing since WrestleMania that, and the articles that I was reading and everything, the idea that WWE has right now for Roman Reigns is to try to build up sympathy for him, to show that he's struggled, and you know, you've got the cage match where he really won but he didn't win, and now this, and just poor Roman. The problem is you can't do that after everybody stops giving a crap about him. So now that we all don't care about him, it's, you know what, I'm actually happy. I can't wait till Braun Strowman screws Roman Reigns out of the title. I am going to be legit happy for that. And until they actually give Roman the push that he wants or the needs or anything like that, if it's not a heel push, until that day, I will be happy with him being screwed over by the WWE.
Yeah, I don't see how you book sympathy for Roman Reigns getting screwed out of your second most, probably not even second, yeah, second most, third most maybe popular babyface in Braun Strowman. Like, you know that the crowd is going to explode
right when
he comes out to cash in. Like that, unless they are turning Roman heel, and I don't really believe they are, it's time to give up on him. That Roman gender match was basically of no value. The crowd didn't care. It is, you know, we already had Beat the Traffic with Roman versus Joe, and now we have Let's Just Do Whatever We Want. The crowd has rejected Roman thoroughly. It doesn't matter what you do at this point. He is a lost cause to the babyface, so you can try whatever you want to get all the sympathy behind him and have the crowd love him, because he's getting screwed by management because Vince is Brock's boy or whatever the crap they want to go with. Doesn't matter. You know, as long as Michael Cole's out there yelling, the big dog, we hate him. Deal with it.
Hey, Roger, just out of curiosity, what if that was the main event of the pay-per-view? Do you think half of the arena would have gone home?
Yes. That crowd was so disinterested. Had they closed with Roman versus Jinder, people would have gotten up and left. They did not care about that. I have not seen a match so summarily dismissed between two relatively big names, like whatever you want to throw Jinder as, probably in a decade. Was just, they did not care, like, at all. Like, did they react to a single spot in that match? It was, the announcers tried to talk over it as if the crowd was reacting, and it was so blatantly obvious. It was like, is this a bad dubbing? Like, this reminded me of when they would have Kai and Tai say, indeed. That's how off the sound was. So, you know, we had our discussion about Roman Reigns, but he's jumped the shark. So until you turn him heel, this is his future. I don't think it's going to change until he gets to the Cena level of, all right, you've been doing it for 15 years and we're just tired, and now we have somebody else that we hate more than you. The best thing to happen to John Cena was Roman Reigns. And the best thing to happen to Roman Reigns will be whatever guy we hate down the pipeline, Bar Sullivan, let's say, who sucks even more than him, and we hate him. Because until that happens, Roman sucks.
I was trying to think of something else funny to say about Roman, but just watch him. Oh, that's right. The chants going on during that match were hilarious. That was like the best part about the match. But the thing is, they let that thing go on too long. I'm guessing off the top of my head, it was like at least 15 minutes. They should have cut it down to like 5 and just been like, all right, we're done. It's Chicago. Because you can't have that match in Chicago. You might be able to get it somewhere else, but not in Chicago. They're going to crap all over that match. But
I don't know why he was in Chicago. Like, in all honesty, like, do it at Extreme Rules. Do it in front of a crowd that is not nearly as hostile.
It's in Philly.
Chicago is a terrible. Yeah.
So you don't
like
want
Chicago,
to
Chicago, Philly. Like, no. Like,
hey, here's a better thought. Don't do Roman gender.
Just don't do Roman or gender.
There we go. Do Roman gender on the no show. Like the card that no one buys tickets to, do it on that one. Because no one and this is the problem, is that I get what they were going for. Look, I detest gender. I hate him. He's the worst man to ever touch the championship. But I'm not going to like Roman just because I hate gender. I just now hate both of the people in the match. And you know what happens when I hate both the people in the match? I just don't care. It works with two baby faces. It doesn't work with two heels. And Roman Reigns is a heel to the fans. He just is.
And it's in Chicago again. He's a heel in Chicago. And so is gender. So no one gives a crap about it. So they're going to chant CM Punk the entire time. All right. Anyways, let's move on to the IC title picture. So Seth Rollins retained that Money in the Bank. And then the following night to maybe give someone, I don't know, make him happy, Dolph Ziggler decided to beat him, which I was kind of shocked about. But do you think that's actually because his contract's coming up, AP?
Maybe. Maybe they had a better storyline in place. My guess is that they're trying to set up a feud with him and Drew McIntyre. I got to say, I've been very happy with Drew McIntyre's call-up. I think that they've done a very good job pairing him with Ziggler. It honestly is very reminiscent of Shawn Michaels and Diesel. And I know that comparison's already been made. And obviously, Ziggler and Michaels has been made a million times. But it honestly feels like that. And Drew McIntyre feels like a whole new superstar. He really reinvented himself. And to see what he did in NXT and to see what he's doing now, I think it's fantastic. And I think a match with him and Rollins could be low-key one of WWE's best matches of the year. I actually think that Drew McIntyre has the capability of putting on an amazing match. And Rollins, of course, can just work his butt off to any degree. So I think that that's what they're going for right now. And Ziggler just happens to be the person to take the title off of him. And really, it's going to be between Rollins and McIntyre. That's my guess.
I thought Drew McIntyre was the Shawn Michaels in this analogy. Yeah, I'm a little surprised that Ziggler won. I mean, I guess maybe I feel like we talk about Ziggler's contract being up every year. Like, it's really weird how he's the only guy whose contract is always expiring. Like, he must sign the worst extensions in the history of contracts. Yeah, a little surprised that he won. I wouldn't be too surprised if he dropped it the following week. They're really hyping up that rematch. It might even main event Raw for all we know. I think the money is in with Drew McIntyre, to be honest. I think him and Rollins, like Aaron said, could tear it, you know, absolutely tear it up. I think Ziggler, we know what he is. He's a fine mid-card hand. To me, Ziggler should be the one doing the outside interference. I think McIntyre should be the one doing the matches. Because to me, McIntyre has main event potential, whereas Ziggler is what he is. He's a solid IC US title guy. He can occasionally jump up into the main event. But if you're building your show around him, it's because you're wrestling on Impact Wrestling as opposed to a main show. Because he's just not a guy you build a company around. Like, that's just, he is what he is. But fine match. I thought Elias did a great job at Money in the Bank. I hope he gets more opportunities like this because I think he's worthy of the mid-card title and maybe down the line even a main event slot. I really hope McIntyre is the one to get the larger push out of this because I've seen Ziggler win the IC title, I don't know, half a dozen times. I don't think I've cared in a long time, maybe since him and Miz feuded 2 years ago. But, you know, I hope this is really more of a step up for Rollins because he proved over the last three to four months, just going into, what, Elimination Chamber, he absolutely tore it up. And if anyone is worthy on Raw to face Brock Lesnar at SummerSlam, it is Seth Rollins. Like, if you want Brock Lesnar to get your money's worth and put on a fantastic main event match, do Seth Rollins versus Brock Lesnar. Let Seth Rollins be the guy who beats Lesnar, and then let Braun cash in, because that will actually get you sympathy for your babyface champion who went through hell to beat Brock, only to have another monster cash in on. That's a good story.
But do you want to have Seth actually feud with Braun, of all people?
Yeah, I think Seth and Braun could do a great job. Seth Rollins can, in my opinion, work with anyone. And Braun is at his best when he can work with very athletic guys. If you look at the offense that Braun does, it's a lot of throws, it's a lot of slant. Seth will sell his butt off. It'll be fantastic. And the thing is, all Seth has to do is catch him one time. Even in that feud, if he beats him one time with a curb stomp, crowd will go crazy. Because you don't have to turn Braun heel because he can work the dominant, powerful style, and the crowd will be behind Seth Rollins. I mean, I'm not saying he's AJ Styles, but he can work that style where you just get behind him as the sympathetic babyface who's trying to fight uphill against the monster, especially if he's the guy who's just beaten Brock. I would love to see them feud the 2 to 3 months because I think they could have a very good series of matches. And I think Seth could help Braun get to that next level as well. Because, I mean, to be quite honest, Braun isn't going to get better working against Brock or Roman or Jinder or any of those guys. He needs to be working with high-class wrestlers, you know, Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, Finn Balor, Seth Rollins. Let him learn. Don't just throw him in there against Jinder Mahal and expect him to get any better because Jinder sucks, you know. You cook an omelet, you better have good ingredients or it's going to come out tasting terrible.
An analogy. I'll say this for the Rollins has been your workhorse on Raw. He is the only one that's probably bringing in views and everything. But what I found confusing and a little disturbing too is the fact that you had him win against Elias due to the tights, and they made mention of that multiple times. So when you have this match now go on Raw, and it's like, oh, it's Ziggler, you know, no biggie and everything like that, you get the surprise factor of, oh, holy cow, he actually won the title. But now I'm a little confused, and what are you going to do with Elias and his claim that he should get a rematch due to the tights being held or anything? And did they even address that on Raw? I don't know. I didn't get to see it. So
I just think they did. I think they talked about how you got away with using the tights last night, and now it came back to bite you, or something to that effect.
But it was after the fact, wasn't it? See, I just don't understand why Elias just didn't come out and say, I want a rematch because you had the tights, and it was clear you had the tights. The only way you can beat me is if you cheat. But, again, we get into this confusing of writing and everything, and I want to say that this is something that they're going to miss the opportunity because the main match should be McIntyre versus Rollins. I think that's a better match. Move Elias onto something else because you know what? He did a great job in the match. He deserves a good feud, a very good feud. You know, what that's going to be, I don't know because I just don't like Raw right now. But you're going to see McIntyre probably Rollins on Raw all the way up until the pay-per-view, and then it will be Ziggler versus Rollins.
I want to say something about Raw real quick before we get our sponsor. Okay, so Raw, I actually sat there and had it playing because I had a long meeting on Monday. I had it on mute. It was one of the worst shows I've seen in a long time. And the thing is, I've watched them in previous weeks, and they keep getting worse. At what point do you just throw the towel in and say, we have to think completely different here? At what point?
When Vince McMahon loses control.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? After seeing what their stock closed at recently, I don't think they care. Yeah, they don't care. It's because it's not about it. The product isn't just the individual wrestlers, and it's honestly, I don't even feel like it's the show as a whole. Instead, it's the company. It's an experience, right? You think about Disney and you think about happy childhood memories. You don't think about the, you know, the shady side of Disney, you know, some of the stuff that they've done that is not very moral, you could say. Honestly, well, hopefully they do. You know, with WWE, you know, it's an experience and that's the way they look at it. Yeah. This past Monday's Raw was pretty bad. I think, you know, before I can't tell you the last good Raw, to be perfectly honest. And yeah, I mean, they don't care because they're making money hand over fist.
I mean, if I can make as much money as they're making without trying, I don't really have motivation to try. I mean, I know it sounds annoying as a fan, but if you're going to pay me that much money to just sit on my butt and do nothing, why would I work harder to make? Because, I mean, that's the thing, right? I don't necessarily know that they need to do anything different. So I hate it as a fan. I dislike the direction that Raw is going. But if they're going to still make money with these three-hour shows and people are going to throw what Fox threw at them, $1 billion essentially over 5 years, you know, no reason to change the formula.
All right, so let's thank our sponsor, HostGator. Are you a blogger or a podcaster? Or are you just not happy with your web host? You need to check out HostGator.com. You're going to find web hosting made easy and affordable. HostGator offers unlimited disk space, unlimited bandwidth, one-click script installs with a free set builder, and hands on the best control panel out there. Stop by today and try a free demo to see how easy it is. And if you use a special coupon code OFFTHEMARK, you're going to save 40% off your web hosting packages. So what are you going to lose? Check out HostGator.com and take a bite out of your web hosting costs. Also, make sure you check out Section 86's Off the Mark page. Click on the banner at the top to save big on items from WWEShop.com. So, Aaron, you have an interesting topic, and I actually agree that we need to talk about this. NXT call-ups, successes, failures, and we're not sure yet. So I'll start off with you, Aaron. Who are some of these successes from NXT?
Yeah, so I thought it'd be kind of interesting for us to talk about what has happened with some of the NXT call-ups, because there's a lot of people that end up getting called up, or you look at them in NXT and you're like, oh, we got to call them up right away. They're going to do so great on the main roster. And then some of them do succeed, and then some of them have, you know, floundered, failed, you know, and been kicked out of the company. Big Cass and Enzo, obviously, being a couple of them. But so some of the successes, just to kind of point out a few, obviously the Shield. The Shield were in NXT for a number of years. Some of the champions we have, Kevin Owens, who was an NXT champion, same thing with Samoa Joe. If you look at the women's side, you have Charlotte, you have Sasha Banks, who are also successes. So they came up and they did very well. And I think that there's a theme for some of them that have done well, which is they weren't just over in NXT, but they were so over that you couldn't fill up their buckets of being over anymore. All right. They were overflowing with how well they were doing there. And so they got called up to the main roster where they had storylines planned for them, where they had, hey, here's what we're doing with this person for the next 6 months, and then we'll see where to go from there. And they get into high-profile feuds right away. So you take a look at Kevin Owens. His first feud was John Cena. You know what I mean? Like, what? There's nowhere to go but up for him, right? So that was him. You had Samoa Joe went with Rollins. Obviously, Rollins, Reigns, and Ambrose with the Shield. You had that aspect of it. You look at the ladies with the Women's Revolution. So I think that's one of the things that they did really well as far as the successes go. Now, some of the failures, and Roger, I know you've been critical of some of them that have gotten called up. What would you contribute some of the failures to? And I know that there's a list that you could probably pull from, but what do you think is the biggest failures, and why are they failures?
Okay, let's see. Biggest failures off the top of my head, Bo Dallas, just misuse. I mean, that has been their biggest problem, is that they have not understood what made the character successful. I mean, maybe the biggest failure coming up was that whole class with Bailey, Paige, and Emma. Like, I cannot believe that they completely destroyed all of them. Bailey was probably the most over genuine baby face this side of Sami Zayn that you ever had in NXT, and they managed to screw that up. I don't want to say Sami Zayn is a failure, because while he hasn't won any titles or any feuds, even to my knowledge, he's at least got a consistent spot on the card. Neville, I don't know how I felt about how they used him, because he should have been much more over. But once they finally gave him the King of the Cruiserweight gimmick, he did a fantastic job in that role. The Revival, I can't even understand how they went from putting on the best matches that we've seen in tag team wrestling over the past 10 to 15 years to nothing more than a joke of an afterthought. Apollo Crews, he was never given a chance to even get, you know, out of the starting box. I mean, and honestly, the list can go on and on for the people that they failed with. But the biggest problem is that the main roster creative sucks. I mean, that's too much talent that should have been used properly while people who don't deserve the spots that they were given, like a Jinder Mahal, not that I need to rant about him very long, were given these opportunities instead of people who were far more talented. Now, I'm not going to say everyone that came up was a failure, because I think you have some good success stories. Rusev, Baron Corbin. Obviously, Kevin Owens, though I would say something about Kevin. If Finn Balor doesn't get hurt, is Kevin even the Universal Champion?
I'd say so.
Ooh, that's a good question.
Because they obviously, that was not the plan. It was clearly to be Finn Balor's championship, and then he got hurt. I don't think Finn was scheduled to lose it to Kevin Owens. Maybe he was down the road, and they just accelerated that time frame, but I doubt it. That's just my personal thinking on that one. And to be quite honest, outside of the year on SmackDown where Kevin Owens was given the spotlight to feud with Shane McMahon, he's kind of been pushed as an afterthought on Raw. IC champion, US champion, he beat John Cena once and then tapped out to him, I think, twice in a row. then really other than that, for the most part, he looked like Roman's, you know, personal punching bag. Him and Jericho had a fantastic feud, but again, most of that happened because of Finn Balor's injury. And but now
he's
Kevin's back
on Raw. He's in high profile feuds though. That's, I think, the big thing, right? When you look at somebody like a Apollo.
Is he on Raw high profile feuds, or is he on high profile feuds when he was on SmackDown?
I think both. I think that the feud with Jericho was a very large one. That was a very high-profile feud when he was on Raw. And you then obviously it was on SmackDown, went back to Raw, and you take a look at what he's done so far, and they're putting him, you know, even with Braun Strowman, you know, with what they've done with him, you know, I would argue that they're putting him in a spotlight to make sure that you know who he is, that you're aware of him, and that you know that he's conniving and, you know, he is a dastardly heel. And so I don't know. I would disagree with about Kevin Owens.
I mean, I'm not saying he's a failure. I just don't think he's the massive success story that you would say maybe some of the other people from NXT, like Charlotte Flair, who is a massive success story and without a doubt one of the shining jewels that NXT has ever produced. I wouldn't put Kevin Owens in that class.
As a side note, with the whole Universal Champion thing, how many Universal Champions have there been?
Four?
Five.
Finn Balor, Goldberg, Brock Lesnar, Kevin Owens.
And?
Vacant.
There you go. But here's something interesting. So you brought up because I believe that Kevin Owens was going to win the Universal Championship, but I think it was going to happen maybe at Royal Rumble, and then he could drop it to Goldberg at Fastlane. So then Goldberg and Brock can go at it. And I think that's what the plan was, but they're like, what do we do? So I looked it up. Owens had it for 188 days afterwards. So to me, that says that at some point they were going to drop it.
Yeah, maybe. Now, Doug, what about you? What are your thoughts on kind of what the differences between why some succeed, why some fail? You know, what sticks out to you?
A lot of it's the booking. You look at some of these that you've listed under the failures, and just, you know, nobody gave poor Bo Dallas. They just didn't believe in him, apparently, enough. And I thought that was one of the best things when he came out with like the political sign and everything like that to believe. And he's done some good things. They just never push him in the right way. They could have put him with the Wyatt family to get him over a little bit more. I mean, this was one of your first NXT champions, and he was wonderful in NXT. You know, they just, you look at, Adam Rose, that was a gimmick that just, again, you had a popular gimmick, a popular thing that he did, and then you moved it to the main roster, and it's like, oh, okay, that's going to work for a little bit, but then where's the everything else? He should have stayed in NXT a little bit longer just to make sure that he was something more than just a theme song. And same thing, I think, with Apollo Crews. I think he just got moved up too quick. He's athletically gifted, but you never established him really in NXT to do anything. He never was in the contention really for the title. He was never in a good, solid feud. He just was an impressive person. No real talent on the mic or anything like that. He can wrestle. I know he can wrestle. He can put on a good match, but it's just no direction for him. He needs something to, he could use a staple, a bigger staple than Titus Worldwide, because that to me is just a joke thing. And I think that's the problem with a lot of these NXT call-ups is when you have so much talent, sometimes when you are that little fish in a big pond, you're just going to get lost in everything. And they don't push anybody. They don't have anything to do with them. I'm afraid for AOP right now, just because what happened with them? They got called up. They were supposed to be in the Money in the Bank tag team ladder match, but when you canceled that, now all of a sudden you don't have them on NXT. You don't have them on TV. Sanity just debuted. So where's AOP? And how long is it going to take them to get back onto the main show? There's two guys that have great talent. You know, maybe not a mic skill. Like, I can understand if Paul didn't want to do the full Raw schedule of everything and travel and everything. So, but you're going to need to find them some kind of manager to speak for them. And kind of a Paul Heyman type person. And maybe that's what you do with some of these people, like Xavier Woods. He is a, I'll give him an okay. He's gotten a lot better in the actual wrestling, but he's wonderful on the mic. You, some of these people that are, that have talent, you know, doing promos and everything like that, that maybe the wrestling and they're not so big, give them some, something to do like a Xavier Woods. And then they can start wrestling and start making everything and doing good matches and make themselves that way. But it all comes down to creative. If they don't have an idea for you, you get put to the back burner and you don't get any spotlight. You don't get anything there. You're not going to have any fan support. So if American Alpha, you know, right now, unfortunately, injuries, I think that's a big thing with like the Revival. You almost have to put them as a failure right now just due to the aspect that they've done nothing, unfortunately, injuries. But then when they came back and now it's like they're not injured anymore, creative doesn't have anything for them. We're just going to have you run out here and do a gimmicky little thing and move on. They're not succeeding where they succeeded in NXT. And I think something they might want to consider is just leaving people in NXT just so they can be successes in NXT. Until you start retiring or getting rid of more people on the main roster and you need to have somebody be pulled up, just leave them there.
Question for all three of you. Can you think of any tag teams that have succeeded from NXT to the main roster?
Oh, that's a great question.
Bludgeon Brothers?
Bludgeon Brothers were not the Bludgeon Brothers in NXT. They were the Wyatt family. And they were with, and I don't even know that they really did anything until this gimmick.
Successful because of Bray?
Yeah, they were kind of useless until Bray. I mean, you look at the Ascension, massive failures, the Vaudevillains, failures, the Certified Gs, don't even have jobs, American Alpha, failures.
Failures as a tag team, man. They're starting to do their own thing there, but
Chad Gable is unfortunately probably reduced to jobbing. But yeah, I mean, maybe they're the most successful. The Revival, I think we could argue their failures. Authors of Pain. The tag teams do not succeed when they come up to the main roster. They probably had it the worst of the NXT call-ups because they either get broken up too soon, like Enzo and Cass have no business breaking up, or they have no direction. Like, is there a tag team storyline on either show right now?
No, but you know, and that's because Vince hates tactics. I mean, he really does, because he doesn't see the money in them. He sees the money in them breaking up and then getting back together and then breaking up again. I would say that Enzo and Big Cass, they were successful because they were in big storylines consistently. Even when they broke up, they were in big storylines. It's just that those two were kind of idiots in what they had done. But I do want to just real quick, and guys, please correct me if I'm wrong. We were at the Raw after WrestleMania 32, and there I felt like when Apollo Crews came out, I felt like his pop would say, oh, that's kind of cool. Like, yeah, but it was not Enzo and Cass's pop was huge. That was a massive pop. When they came out, everybody was cheering. Whereas Apollo Crews, it was like a, oh, hi, cool, thanks for coming sort of thing. I mean, misremembering that, or what do you guys think?
No, and
from what I remember, came out. I thought he was shown on big screen first.
Andy, what do you think?
I thought they said, like, oh, making his debut backstage.
No, it was the Vaudevillains. They announced we're going to be coming to SmackDown or something like that.
No, I remember that.
They put a screen up for Apollo Crews saying, Apollo, or coming up next, Apollo Crews.
Yeah, so he didn't get like this, like when Enzo and Cass came out, it was interrupt the Dudley Boys, and correct. It was like their music hit. So it was a big, like, oh, like Enzo and Cass are here, and it was fun, and we were super hyped, and we did all the catchphrases, but like Apollo Crews just kind of like, they didn't even give him like a hype. It was just kind of like, oh yeah, he's here. Okay. And it wasn't like he was like a former heavyweight champion. Like, if you said like, oh yeah, Samoa Joe's here, you're like, oh, okay. But Samoa Joe came out and attacked Rollins. Like, he made an impact on night one. Crews didn't do anything. So I'm not surprised that no one really cared, because it was like, I think he came out and had a match against some nobody. Like, I literally Breeze. Couldn't tell you anything.
Tyler Breeze versus Apollo Crews. It got one and a quarter star, just to let you know.
Yeah. So, no, I don't. I think he got a pop of like, oh yeah, I, if I watch NXT, I know him, but I don't really care right now because you haven't given me a reason to care.
And I forgot about this. New Day retained. I thought it said that New Day won the tag titles. I was like, what? But yeah, they retained against the League of Nations. And I think they ended up breaking up. I don't know if it was that day.
The day Barrett got not fired, but let go.
Yeah. They attacked him, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So my question was, and you had answered, it was, you know, was the pop even there? You know, and I didn't feel like it was. And, you know, obviously that goes a little bit to booking. And, you know, Doug had very eloquently said, you know, that they just did not have anything for him. And, you know, there just wasn't something there, you know, for Apollo Crews. But there are a few other ones, though, too, that I feel, I don't know, maybe I expected more, but I think about Ty Dillinger. Like Ty Dillinger, you know, Doug, do you have an idea of what went wrong with him?
He unfortunately kind of got the Adam Roche treatment. He had a great gimmick in the 10, but that thing died. And then he does not have the size. He does not have the athletic ability some of these other people are doing. I love Ty Dillinger. His match versus was a huge surprise to me. That was the first time I saw him, and the fact that he could actually hang with Finn Balor. Of course, I think Finn Balor brought out the best in him. But to know that he has that kind of talent, but because he doesn't have that size, and the only thing he has is the 10 thing going for him, Vince ain't gonna push. That's all that's gonna be. He's gonna be fanboy love, but he's not gonna get any kind of push. And I mean, and that's one of the things I fear for, like, you know, Chris Hero or Cassius Ohno, if he ever gets called up, he's gonna probably fall in category. I know you hate that, Andy.
I don't think he's ever gonna get called up. I think he's gonna stay at
that's
NXT.
True too.
And
I agree with Andy.
And the thing is, that does upset me, but I think he's protected down there, because if you put him on the main roster, you have to deal with psychos that decide to throw stuff at Paige's face in Chicago, you know, while she's in Chicago. You're going to have that same problem with Cassius Ohno. So I don't want to see that. I just, not my thing. But yeah, he's one of those guys that I know will never come up. It would be kind of cool to see him wrestle in WrestleMania for some reason, you know, like in the Andre Giant Battle Royale. But I think that's the extent of where he will be, unfortunately. But, you know, one thing, you know, we talked about it. By the way, you forgot, Aaron, that Jinder Mahal was in NXT at one point. Yes, because Seth Rollins beat him in order to become the first NXT champion.
That is true. So literally the biggest failure of all time from NXT.
Wow. Almost the first champion.
Oh, yeah, he was close. He might have been the first champion. But yeah.
Once again, proving that NXT knows what they're doing more than the main roster. Let me say this about Dillinger, because I do like him, but I disagree that he was a failure, because I think he hit his ceiling. I don't think Ty Dillinger was ever going to be more than what he is now. I always thought he was very similar to Zack Ryder in the sense that he's a good wrestler. He has a decent look, not a great look. He's not particularly big. He's not particularly tall. He's got okay charisma, but he's not special in any area. Like, if you take away the 10 gimmick, does he really do anything else that's noticeable? Like, I remember Ty Dillinger before he was the Perfect 10. He was the guy who Jason Jordan left in their little tag team. And he was kind of just a nondescript wrestler. And so I liked Ty, but I thought he was always going to be the babyface that we like, who you use for heels to get heat on. He always should have a spot in the Royal Rumble every single year at number 10. I always thought they should have given him the master of the countout. I thought that would have been a fun little gimmick for him to do when he's trying to win everything by a count of 10. But I thought he hit his potential pretty much when he beat Eric Young in the cage match. I was like, okay, this is your ceiling. He should never be your heavyweight champion. He probably realistically shouldn't even be your second-tier champion. He's a European champion type guy, a television champion, a hardcore champion, maybe a low-end tag champion. So I don't consider him a failure, because I thought his potential was, you know, he was a third or fourth round draft pick. He was not the guy that you drafted and said, this is a franchise cornerstone. This is the guy who's like, he's a solid role player. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. But when I look at disappointments, I don't think Ty Dillinger is a disappointment. I would even argue he's one of, you know, one of their better success stories, because he was going nowhere. And they gave him a gimmick that worked perfectly and got him to the main roster. And his chants are still one of the most over things on the roster. I would say that's a absolute plus sign for both the main roster and NXT when it comes to Dillinger, especially considering some of the other guys who have not done well, who should have done much better.
I would agree that there's people that should have done better, but I would say that Ty Dillinger, the problem is that they called him up, and then he was on like probably three or four SmackDowns, and then completely went away. Like, they did absolutely nothing with him. And I can't even tell you the last one that he's been on. I can't. And it's really unfortunate. Yeah. But I don't even know when that was, you know, like.
It was like 2 weeks ago. Was it? Before Last Man Standing. Yeah.
But either way, like, he's like almost not there at all. And I agree. He'd be your European champion. You know, that's definitely where his, you know, ceiling lies. But, but there are some other ones, though, too, you know, and I think that there are a few that I'm unsure of, which I look at somebody like a Bray Wyatt or a Rusev. And Bray Wyatt, who's a former WWE champion, but, you know, the years that we've seen of him, I don't know if he is a success or a failure. And same thing with Rusev, because I feel that there's a lot that they've done very incorrectly. Or even Finn Balor, you know, that's another one that I'm a little, you know, are they writing good stories for them? Are they putting him in with good antagonists? You know, do they have good dance partners for Finn? And I feel like they don't. I feel like that Finn is floundering, very similar to Ty. Now, Finn has way more, you know, pluses in his column than Ty does, but he's very much that, what are they even doing with him? What is his storyline? What feud does he even have? And he's just getting thrown into multi-man matches. I'm assuming he's going to be thrown into that multi-man match for the number one contender spot, and that'll be it. But nothing else for him.
To your point about Bray Wyatt, I will say that if we're going to consider Kevin Owens a success because he's been consistently in high-profile feuds, Bray Wyatt has been by default a success because he's been consistently in high-profile feuds. Prior to basically his tag team, he was always feuding with either a main eventer or a super upper mid-card. The feuds are stupid, but it was Randy Orton feuds. I mean, if you look at pretty much every big name on the roster, he's feuded with everyone. John Cena, Randy Orton, The Undertaker match at WrestleMania. I think he's had a feud with Seth Rollins. I can't remember, to be quite honest. I know he had one with Dean Ambrose. I mean, he has Finn Balor. He's had one. So if we're going to say staying in high profile feud, Daniel Bryan, I think at one point in time, right before WrestleMania 30. So if Owens is a success, Bray Wyatt is most certainly a success because he has feuded with way more big names, in my opinion, than I would even argue anyone who's ever come from NXT who's not Seth Rollins, Roman Reigns, or Dean Ambrose.
All right. Yeah, I would take that. I would. That's a very sound logic there.
You know, one thing about all the, you know, successes, like there's two on the list that I did not think they were going to be successful when they came up. I'm like, they're going to fail. And that was Alexa Bliss and Carmella. I really thought that I thought Alexa Bliss was not ready. I thought she was really green in the ring. And I thought Carmella was just kind of there. There was nothing special about her. And ironically, they're the two women's champions of all things.
Wait, when you say you thought Alexa was going to fail, did you mean that you thought she was going to fail as in the company wasn't going to get behind her?
No, I thought she would just suck. I thought that she would just suck. But she has slowly improved over time. And, you know, Carmella, I can't say that for, because I don't think she has. She just has, her mic work is a lot better. But I think the reason why Ellsworth even came back was because they needed someone with her. And I think they noticed that. So they're like, hey, let's go ahead and have him come back. And I think that's the real reason why he's back now. But everyone else I knew, I knew they were going to do good. The only team, I guess the one tag team that I was really disappointed in was the Ascension. I thought their gimmick was fine at NXT, and the fact that they got brought up to the main roster and then they just kind of like, don't know what to do with you. So there you go. We're going to make fun of Legion of Doom and call it a day. That's pretty much what happened with them.
Well, so Andy, I would argue, did you really see much potential in the Ascension? Like, really, did you see them did you see them in the same vein that we see the Revival? Where you thought this could be one of the best tag teams. Because Ascension, for their great run in NXT, I can't think of a great match they ever had, personally.
Not a great match, but they were entertaining, and the crowd was always behind them, and I bought into it. I was really excited whenever they came out. I'm like, all right, here's the Ascension. They're going to come out and beat these guys up, and that was about it. But they were entertaining, at least to me.
Okay, question for question for everyone. Who's your biggest disappointment? And I guess let's just say, so we're not negative, who's your biggest success story?
Success? I'll just say Seth Rollins. Just right at the bat. Yeah. Seth Rollins is the biggest success. You know, for failure, I would have to go and just say Apollo Crews. I think he's the biggest failure, unfortunately.
Rollins for success by far, and then I would say Ascension. I mean, they were just trashed on commentary. They got destroyed by the New Age Outlaws and, you know, a bunch of other old timers, and they were made fun of the moment they came up. So they didn't have a prayer. They didn't have a chance.
Definitely Rollins for biggest success. I'm actually going to go with biggest failures. I think it's Bayley. Just how over she was in NXT, it really seemed like she had nowhere else to go but up. And they've just, I don't know where they lost that one.
Biggest failure is Bayley to me as well. I agree with that 100%. She was, her moment of beating Sasha at Brooklyn 2 was one of the most heartfelt, you know, Kenny Omega type moments where the whole crowd was happy for her and people were genuinely behind her. And all they had to do was not screw it up. And I will give Aaron his credit. He said they will screw this up on the main roster. And sure enough, they did eventually. I'm going to disagree with you guys on success story, and I only say it for one reason. Seth Rollins, from the moment he showed up, was pushed as part of the Shield. I don't think anyone was really that surprised that he became a success story, other than the fact that, I guess, 31 was a surprise. I am more or less going to go with the Charlotte Flair success story because she got women's wrestling over to a point that I didn't think it was going to happen. I would have never guessed that at WrestleMania 32, the women would have had the best match in the night. I would have laughed at you in the face, and yet they did, and I don't think it was even close. She's been in main events. She's done the Hell in a Cell. They've done the Iron Woman. Even if that feud wasn't the greatest feud, they obviously did Charlotte Sasha too many times. I say Charlotte, and really that whole women's division, Charlotte and Sasha, when Bayley was doing very well, Becky being the first SmackDown champion, that's their number one success story because they took the women from divas, where we just didn't care, to we actually enjoyed the women's matches that they put on, the Money in the Bank and the Rumble and opportunities for Asuka and people like that and Ember Moon. So I'm going to say their women's division as a whole was a success, but that's probably because they had Charlotte Flair. I don't know if they'd do that without her.
To Roger's point, and the fact that women's wrestling now is at a whole new level and high, they just had the house show in Peoria, and people are legitimately mad because there was absolutely no women's match whatsoever, even though there was an advertisement for one. And, I mean, vocally going out and, you know, messaging and tweeting and everything, also that Strowman wasn't there, even though he was advertised too, but it was more the fact that there was absolutely no women's representation in Peoria.
Was it Peoria, Saudi Arabia?
Yeah, that's what I was wondering.
Yep. And, yeah, Doug, will you ever go to a house show if you have to pay for it?
No.
Will you go pay to watch, the White Sox, in batting practice?
No.
All right. Just want to make sure. Just want to see if your attitude changed towards that, but it hasn't. And I agree with you.
Would you go pay to see Roman Reigns?
No.
If they said that he was getting beaten with a baseball bat.
Yeah, he didn't finish the sentence.
Right. Oh.
Would you pay to go see Roman Reigns get hit with a Money in the Bank briefcase?
Yeah. If you're going to tell me that Strowman's going to cash in on Roman Reigns, then yes, I would go see that. If you're going to tell me that Braun Strowman is going to cash in a Roman Reigns match just to upset him, I would go see that. Like, I will pay to see the demise and or the suffering of Roman Reigns. I mean, I even told my buddy when he and while they were in Peoria and everything like that, they actually went to Gold's Gym and I don't know why I was surprised at this, but my buddy was at the gym and he works out there and he started messaging me going, "Hey, look, Corbin's here." He's like, "I'm very surprised at how much he can lift." And I was like, "Really? You're surprised? I mean, he is an ex-NFL player." He's like, "Yeah, but he's flabby as hell." So that was kind of funny. But then he said that there was a large crowd of people just waiting for wrestlers to either go in or exit. And apparently Finn in his wrestling gear because he had the jacket and everything in the gym.
Does he just walk around his power club stuff all the time?
I think he does. I don't know. But One of the people that was lifting was Roman Reigns, and I told him, I was like, hey, look, go kick while he's lifting so that he gets injured. Like, kick him in the balls so he drops weights on himself, and then we don't have to worry about him at Money in the Bank or anything. And he goes, dude, he's really, really tall. My buddy's not the tallest person. He goes, it wouldn't be more of a kick. It'd be more of a punch. And I said, dude, I've got your bond money.
GoFundMe.
For those of us, for those living in Stanford, I want you to know that we're being purely satirical with this. We would in no way shape or form actually harm a wrestler. Please do not blacklist us. Thank you.
And you know, I hate saying it too, because I'm absolutely sure that Roman Reigns, the person, is a wonderful person. Everything that you hear about his back, behind the scenes character and aspect like that, wonderful person. Jericho praises him for being such a great person backstage and a wonderful father and everything like that. Roman Reigns, the person, I have no problem with. Roman Reigns, the character, I want gone.
Well, you want to see him get beat up. He's the best heel in the company.
Right.
Without a question. If he wasn't
ultimately,
he's doing
it would be
job.
Money.
Yes.
It would be money. It would be absolute money, and I'm just shocked that WWE doesn't do it.
Yep.
That would be actually a pay-per-view. Beat up Roman. Everyone gets a chance at him. They beat him up, and you know.
I think they called that the Royal Rumble.
Yeah, but he lasted, you know, the entire time. And I'm sorry,
he got injured in the first 5 minutes, carried to the back underneath the rope, and only came back for 5 minutes. I think he only had about a total of 10 minutes in that whole match. Best thing that ever happened was Triple H throwing him out.
Yeah, you can tell by the crowd.
With the whole thing with that, if he would have thrown AJ Styles out within just a few seconds, that crowd would have just crapped on Roman. Roman would then be the biggest heel.
We already did.
Well, I mean, Roman is the biggest heel, and once the WWE finally realizes that, I think that maybe we'll all say, wow, I'm glad Roman's heel. But unfortunately, I don't see that happening anytime soon. And that's all the time we have for this month's show. If you're into the Twitter, you follow the show at OffTheMark86. I want to thank 86 Productions for hosting and any of the podcasts. And I want to thank all of our listeners for taking the time to download and listen to the show. And for Doug Hahn, Roger Cave, and Aaron Hughes, I'm Andrew Hughes. And until next time, we'll see you in the ring.